Welcome to the History Explorer podcast, your place to investigate questions about history with staff from the National Museum of American History. This is Sarah Dinahan, an educator from the museum. The sounds of conventions and political rallies conjure up images of cheering crowds waving red and blue banners and placards, sporting patriotic buttons and hats, and supporting their candidates. National political conventions are events where devoted party members come together to rally behind their choices for president and vice president. Like any good pep rally, they require lots and lots of props that help convention goers express their support, enthusiasm, regional pride, and personal flair. This year, as I watched the conventions, rallies, town halls, and other campaign events, I started to wonder, who makes all of those signs? Who are the people wearing those buttons? And what happens to all of those crazy hats after Election Day? And most importantly, what does all of this stuff say about the American electoral process and who we are as a nation? In this episode, we'll see if we can find the answers to my questions. As you listen to the episode, also see if you can think of the answer to this history trivia question. Who was the first person of color ever to receive a vote to become president at a national nominating convention? We'll have the answer for you at the end of the podcast. But first, back to my questions. Here at the museum, two curators from our political history department are tracking down the answers as they scour campaign events and conventions for memorabilia to add to the Smithsonian's collection.
My name is Larry Bird. I've worked for the Smithsonian for about 30-some years, and I collect American political presidential campaign memorabilia.
Hey, and I'm Harry Rubenstein, and I started joining Larry in this process in 1988, and since then I've been going to the various primaries and conventions since.
We do other things too, but I mean, this year, that's what we're doing.
I recently sat down with Harry and Larry to see if they had any answers to my questions and to find out what questions they ask as they go out on their political artifact hunting expeditions.
Well, you know, we have this wonderful collection that goes all the way back to the American Revolution and George Washington and political campaigns that have begun ever since this democratic process really started in the country. And so our main goal is to keep this historic collection up to date by adding new material as it's created so that when people look back, you know, generations from now, there aren't these huge holes in the collection. What we try to do when we go to these events is document the event. And we're not trying to collect one of everything. It would be way too big. It would be too massive. Somehow we're trying to distill this major event into a small portfolio of material that we can take back. And so we're very selective in what we get. But we're looking for that balance of material produced by the party itself to make and stage the event. We're interested in the material of people who participate in the event to express their views that may or may not be reflective of what the party is doing. We're trying to collect what's also happening around the edges, the protesters that are outside, the reporters that are supporting this. And we're looking for, you know, things that represent this long continuity as well as changes that are in the air at the moment.
Yeah, we really are blessed with this really wonderful collection of political Americana that, as Harry said, goes back to George Washington, maybe even a little before, and you do see a sense of continuity with that past that you can kind of grapple with in a material way. But increasingly, as things move, you know, into radio, then television, and now the internet, things become more and more ephemeral. And, I mean, in the past, of course, we don't have radio, television, and the internet. With George Washington, we have banners, badges, buttons, ribbons, and that sort of thing. So one of the challenges is to document how we're moving forward almost to a non-materiel manner of expression. And one of the things that we do is to come away with some material thing, even of that immateriality, You know, for example, a couple of cycles ago, people began to complain about how conventions were becoming more and more scripted, that there really wasn't any news going on. And so we collected one of the go lights from the speaker's lecterns, you know, which is the traffic light, which tells the speakers, you know, like, hurry up, slow down, you need to wrap this up. And it goes hand in hand with the teleprompter. And we haven't collected a teleprompter, the complete setup. You know, they're still using them, of course. So, I mean, it's not just the spectacle that you see. You know, it's a behind-the-scenes kind of the way it's stage-managed. So we're constantly looking for the way to document in a material way how things are changing and evolving, even as they become less and less tangible, it seems, sometimes.
Sometimes delegates at the conventions use their clothing to get people to ask them questions or to think about particular issues close to their hearts. Harry and Larry are more than willing to oblige.
One of the things we're interested in collecting is how do these people who go to these rallies or go to these conventions present their own political views? You know, we're as much interested in what's happening, you know, off the platform as on the platform. And how do activists get their point of view across? And in many ways, because they don't have access to the media, they're still using very traditional objects, the clothing they wear, the hats they put on, to convey their messages. So we're very interested in collecting that as well.
It's really what the delegates or people who attend these rallies come up with themselves that really lends the air of spontaneity to the proceedings that would otherwise be, you know, pretty canned and by rote, even signs that are made to look as if the person holding it painted it. This is all the tricks of the trade. It's all done well in advance. But the delegate sitting there with the hat that they're wearing, it's a kind of speech, and it's read visually. And I think that it escapes, you know, many journalists who just come and look at this thing as a spectacle. But it's very apparent if you go up and you actually talk to the people. The leading question, the open question, is just, so tell me about your hat.
You know, a lot of the delegates who wear these funny hats, when you ask them why they're wearing these hats, tell you that it's because they want their family back home to see them on the convention floor. And if you see that cheesehead over in Wisconsin, that's me. And they draw on just local identity. Special scarves from the Virgin Islands, Puerto Rican caps that are made in Puerto Rico, all of that is very typical. The other thing people do is they dress up to convey a message. In this recent convention in Tampa, the West Virginia delegates, many of them wore miners' hats with stickers on them. And they did this to draw attention to what they consider to be a war on coal. What the effect, though, of all wearing these miner hats was, is that they ended up with over 100 interviews from reporters on asking that simple question, why are you wearing these hats? You know, traditionally, you can't carry in your own signs, but what you can wear is something that you can control.
Amid the hubbub of a busy convention floor, delegates are often surprised to be approached by curators from the Smithsonian.
You know, we're the odd people out in these large events. You know, there's a few thousand delegates that come to these things. There's tens of thousands of members of the press. And then there's the two of us from the Smithsonian Institution. And so in some ways, when we approach people, you know, it's like out of the blue. You know, it's the last thing they would expect. On the other hand, we've now done this through so many election cycles that many people are familiar with us. So sometimes we catch people by total surprise, and other times they're really familiar with the idea of, you know, where have you been? Why haven't you been here sooner? Right. And we've walked into campaign headquarters in New Hampshire and in Iowa. They have little stashes saying, we've been waiting for you to come.
They remember you. They remember you, but with all the people that you meet after, oh yeah, I do remember you.
And, you know, many political activists have their own little private collection as well that documents their own life within this process. They've collected the campaign buttons that they've worn or candidates that they've supported. So there's a clear link and an appreciation.
But the challenge is, you know, they're so emotionally connected with the things that they do. How do you get it off of them? I mean, in many ways, we're there to collect what they can't give us, you know? And if they could just give it over, would you want it? It wouldn't mean anything. You know, what you're collecting is what that meaning is at that moment anyway. We were in New Hampshire, you know, collecting things the day before the vote. And we were going around, you know, making our canvas of the candidate headquarters. And we developed these theories that, well, if a headquarters has been cleaned out, it's because the campaign is really hot, the candidate's really doing well, and there's nothing because everyone has taken everything. And the ones that aren't are just still filled with stuff. And they're so happy to see you, you know, that anybody's even paying attention. But on one of these outings, we went into Senator Paul Simon's headquarters in Manchester, New Hampshire, and it was cleaned out. There was only one person in there, and he showed us, you know, this box of video cassettes that were the 20-minute candidate biography they would send around to coffee clutches in lieu of the actual candidate going. And I thought, okay, well, we'll take a couple of those. And I was looking around for something, a thing, you know, and I noticed that he had this little bow tie lapel pin that was the Paul Simon logo. And I said, well, you know, hey, what about that lapel pin you're wearing? And he just, like, he put his hand over it, and he just shrunk back in horror that, like, oh, I couldn't give that to you. And the senator gave that to me. Oh, this means so much to me. Oh, please don't ask me for that. And I left him a card, and he never followed up. But, I mean, that's what you wanted to get. And the lesson was that, you know, this stuff really does have meaning to them. Again, as low-tech as the stuff is, there's an element of intangible connection there. So that was what I learned, or we learned from, you know, the personal meaning of the material.
I asked Harry and Larry if they had any advice for students who might want to start their own collections.
My advice is to find those things that attract them, that somehow have a message or a meaning to them personally. Because it's through those eyes that you're able to interpret material. And so I would just look for the things that excite you and build a collection based on that.
Yeah, that's good advice. I mean, and it goes beyond politics. If you're a kid and you want to start a collection, you just have to find something that speaks to you, that interests you. Cut pictures of cars out of a magazine. Go in your backyard, find the mosses, collect the stink bugs, whatever. I mean, it doesn't have to be something that's made to be a collectible, because usually it isn't.
You know, we all sort of approach these questions in the simplest way, which really is, why does it exist? What's interesting about it? Why do I think is interesting about this? If you do that, you're almost all the way there, because that's pretty much what we're doing here at the Smithsonian.
And now for the answer to our history trivia question. The question was, who was the first person of color ever to receive a vote at a presidential nominating convention? And the answer is Frederick Douglass, who received one vote from Kentucky in the 1888 Republican National Convention in Chicago, Illinois. In this episode, we heard about how Harry Rubenstein and Larry Bird collect at the national conventions. Do you have a collection? What is it, and how does it speak to you? Send your answer to historyteachers@si.edu, and let us know if you have any questions you'd like us to explore in a future episode. You can also visit us online at americanhistory.si.edu/podcasts. Thanks for listening to the History Explorer podcast, and thanks to curators Larry Bird and Harry Rubenstein for taking the time to talk with us today. Music for this episode from The Underscore Orchestra, Neep, and The Silent Partner. The History Explorer podcast was made possible by a generous grant from the Verizon Foundation.